Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Last November, my co-host Charles Walforth and I anchored our annual All Ears show when we invite listeners to tell us what they'd like to hear on Hometown Alaska. We had several callers who wanted to talk about who takes care of strays in Anchorage, whether that's cats, dogs, or more exotic species like companion birds and reptiles. And along this same vein, we had a request for what is good etiquette at dog parks. So here to update us on strays in Anchorage and also around Alaska, we have Laura Atwood with the Anchorage Animal Care and Control Center. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
Really happy to have you. We have Captain Brad Larson, an enforcement supervisor with the Animal Care and Control Center.
That's it. Thank you.
Glad to have you here. And then, so that's all an Anchorage Municipal Agency, mm-hmm. but we have a statewide nonprofit, I guess you could say, right? We have Pamela Metters, a director of clinic operations at the Alaska SPCA. So welcome, Pamela.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Really happy to have you all. So I think we're going to be able to talk about Anchorage. We're going to be able to talk cats, dogs, exotic, at least to some extent in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about the state, which has a really different picture than really kind of what's going on in Anchorage. So I guess to start, I thought I'd invite Laura, to go ahead and give us an overview of what's going on at the Animal Care and Control Center. It's a bit of a different story. It's a bit of a good news story, really.
Yeah, it is a good story. So I always like to start out by explaining to people that we're what's called an open admission shelter. So we are the only open admission shelter for the entire municipality of Anchorage, not just the city of Anchorage.
But does that mean come one, come all?
That means exactly that, come one, come all. So any domestic animal that walks through our doors, no matter behavior, no matter age, no matter illness, we take in. So we are there for owner-surrendered animals when families find that they are just not able to care for an animal anymore. We're also there for those lost animals of Anchorage mm-hmm. who come to us in various ways, most often, thankfully, by the Good Samaritans of our community who stop on their way to work and bundle them into their cars and bring
and
them
into
us
well,
and drive them right to us, which is, you know, which is really awesome.
Yeah.
So all domestic animals are welcome at our shelter.
And what sort of census do you have? I think it's been dropping, probably for a lot of good reasons, mm-hmm. like spay and neuter programs and social media and all these assistance groups that are out there. But tell us how your census has been going over the last couple of years.
Exactly. So our what we call our intake numbers, which obviously means the number of animals coming into the shelter, has definitely declined. When we ask ourselves, why is that? It's some of the reasons you brought up. We know that spay-neuter has been working. That's been across the board nationally, really. So spay-neuter has been important. There's simply fewer animals out there. We also know that, yes, animals are still being rehomed, but that often happens now via social media. So if somebody feels, you know, this 2-year-old 70-pound dog is more than I can I think I just kind of referred to my dog, actually. That's exactly what she is. The 2-year-old 70-pound dog that maybe has become a bit too much for you, rather than bringing them to the shelter, they may go through Craigslist or Facebook and try to rehome that animal themselves.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. Yeah. That's a pretty recent phenomenon. Say last 5 years, last 10 years?
Last 5 years definitely for social media, but our intake numbers have been going down, I would say, probably for about the last decade.
Okay. Yes. And I think that dispels a myth that people have that you have to euthanize animals to make room for more that are coming in. You're not having to do that anymore.
No, thank you for bringing that up. We're not. We're lucky. We're able to attend national conferences, some of the managers every year. And so, you know, we hear that in certain areas of the country, us included, shelters are in that situation where we have space. We have empty kennels. There are some areas of the country, particularly the Southeast, for example, where sadly they're not in that situation. In the lower 48, there's great transport. So animals moving from one
around,
area of the country to the other, exactly. But we are able to take in an animal and make a commitment to that animal that if they are safe for public adoption, you know, we evaluate all of our animals, and if their behavior says, hey, this is a great animal to be in our community and to be in a family home, once they go up for adoption, we can stick with them. We have a cat right now, little Apple Cider, who has been with us since December 29th. waiting for a home.
And you feel mm-hmm. you're going to find one.
We're trying to move the universe. Yeah. Let's get apple cider, sweet little orange tabby, adopted. Yeah.
I want to throw out our phone numbers for our listeners. I forgot to do that. And we'll come back to you and talk a little bit maybe about whatever you think we should talk about, overview-ish.
Okay.
But in case you want to participate or maybe you want to adopt an animal or you want to talk about, you know, how to qualify for that, you can give us a call here at 550-8433 in Anchorage. And statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we also welcome an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I know, and this might get pulled Brad in a little bit in an overviewish sort of way. Mm-hmm. Your growth area has been some enforcement, right? Is that right? Am I reading that right?
In enforcement, yeah. I'll let Brad speak to that in terms of enforcement.
Okay.
I'll just quickly touch on, you know, sort of new things that we're doing at the shelter because, you know, fortunately now we're able to serve the community in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those is the monthly pet supply and pet food giveaways. We know that it's expensive to have a pet, and a lot of people love their pets but aren't always able to afford the things that they would like for them. Sometimes fall on hard times and need that bag of dog or cat food to get them through.
Mm-hmm.
We receive a lot of gently used supplies from our community, and we use what we can at the shelter. What we can't use, we make available to people in the community once a month. So that's something new that we've been doing. Yes, it is. It's the fourth Wednesday of every month, starting at 5:30.
5:30 p.m.
5:30 p.m. Things go quickly. We can literally be cleared out before 6 o'clock. We have people line up. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. But people might not know that they can donate things to you too.
Mm-hmm.
So that might help to get that word out that a dog house, a dog bed, dog bowls,
mm-hmm.
Leashes.
Exactly. Those things that, you know, sadly some of the things come to us because somebody's animal has passed on.
Right.
Or it may be the puppy who has grown out of, you know, the booties that they had, or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever that situation may be.
How about anything like grooming equipment or shampoo or anything like even if it's been opened, it's okay.
Even if it's been opened. And, you know, again, you know, we go through that and we say, hey, we don't have a good brush for getting mats out of our cat. So, you know, we'll go ahead and keep that for our animals because we understand that was people's first intent, you know, when they brought these items to us.
Yeah.
So that's been a really successful initiative.
And if you were sort of putting the word out, is there something you need more than other things?
Cat food. We're always cat food.
That came up pretty quick.
Cat food and small dog food at any of our giveaways. It seems we don't have as much of that, and that's what people are always looking for. They're always going, I need some food for my cats.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's touch a little bit on enforcement. Just what's new there. I think I saw on your website that a new enforcement officer had been hired. Whether or not you think you have enough, that was one of the things we were talking about. We were looking for a position.
Looking for a position.
So tell us what's in the world of enforcement. I'm curious what your day is like.
Sure. Well, we've got 7 officers for the municipality of Anchorage, and, you know, that's Portage Turnoff to the south of us going to Knick River North. So, you know, we cover the whole municipality. It's not just the Anchorage Bowl. That's 7 officers to cover all the calls 365 days a year. We've got officers on from 8:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. daily. We got an answering machine, and APD takes a few calls in those off hours. Certainly, we don't have the number of officers that we would like, or I think that we would need to be effective in handling the stray animal problem in the city. The National Animal Control Association came up several years ago, early 2000s, and did an assessment on our program. And based on the population of Anchorage, the square miles that we cover, they recommended something like 18 officers for the city to, you know, to do an effective job.
Mm-hmm.
Officers handle about 6,000 calls a year is what they're answering. And in the enforcement department, we've got a dispatcher who takes the calls from the public. Our dispatch office is open 11 to 7 on weekdays and 10 to 6 on weekends. Outside of that, we have a voicemail that people can leave messages on if they have issues that they need a response during our business hours.
Brad, I'm just going to jump in real quickly. Yeah. As Brad mentioned, so those numbers, I think it's important for the community to realize that we're always in a responsive mode, our officers. So if we get a call about a concern, we respond to that. Yeah. And there is a priority. So a concern about an animal, a welfare concern, is going to be a higher priority, unfortunately, than, oh, there's a loose dog walking down Lake Otis, for instance. If there were more officers, we could be in a more proactive mode, and we could have officers patrolling for stray animals. I'll let Brad take it from here.
Laura's correct. You know, we're strictly responsive. We have very little time to be proactive in the community. You know, officers are going from bite call to attack call to, you know, maybe a confined dog in someone's home. And, you know, if an officer's in Girdwood and then Eagle River in the same day, you know, that consumes a lot of their shift just driving. So, yeah, certainly if we had more staff to be proactive and do a little more community-oriented work, that would be super.
I'm just so curious, Brad, how did this become your field? Are you passionate about animals and then this was the opportunity you had? Or did you just kind of, you know, end up in this job and love it and you've stayed? Or it's just...
Well, I came up to Alaska in the late 90s with the military. I was an MP in the Army. My wife was grew up in Palmer. I met her in the military, and we ended up here. And I got out of the military in 03 and took a job at animal control while I decided what I wanted to be when I grew up. And a year later, I was, you know, I interviewed and was hired for the supervisor a little over a year later. And, you know, nearly 15 years later, this is where I sit. So, you know, certainly I got a passion for the animals. It's kind of interesting to investigate, you know, a dog bite when your victim can't talk to you and you got to figure out what happened.
Because it's a child? Or
well, you're, you know, or maybe like a dog bites another dog and you got to find out what happened.
Or,
you know,
dog on dog
bite. Kids that can't talk or, you know, even when the bad guy per se is the dog and you can't interview him.
Understand
and, you
know, what happened.
Yeah, understand what happened. Yeah. So, you know, that's an interesting aspect of the job. And certainly, you know, I think there needs to be a voice for the animals in our community. And if I can do that, then, you know, that's what I'll do.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit later about reading animal signals. And I think, Brad, you probably have to do that nonstop.
Certainly.
I think that's useful information. I'd like to jump over to Pamela with the Alaska SPCA, which is functioning in Anchorage, a big part of the Anchorage animal welfare community, but also has a statewide focus. So give us a little overview for an SPCA.
Absolutely. So the SPCA is going through a really exciting time right now. We, through some generous donations from our amazing Alaska community, we were able to open up a new clinic that's at 3710 Woodland Drive, and we opened that up in October.
Is that near the Boys and Girls Club, or it's in Spinard?
It's off of Spinard,
Spinard
and Woodland. Right. It's an old First Care building over there. So, and we're still providing, you know, spays and neuters and vaccinations are so important to our community, and that's a backbone. You know, that's really what allows us, along with donations, to provide additional services. And so we're now able to do wellness exams and dental procedures and x-rays and really work with a lot of members of the community that love their animals so dearly. But, you know, it's a burden. Veterinary costs are a burden. And it's great to be able to help folks that wouldn't otherwise maybe be able to go to the vet, or they'd be compromising their, you know, child care and to go to the vet.
Or what they're going to order, food they're going to buy.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Do you have a sliding fee scale, or do you just try to remain open to need?
We remain open to need. We work with a lot of the rescue organizations in town. If we have a pet that has a significant need in a family, we can, you know, call up some of our wonderful rescue organizations and, you know, in Anchorage and in the valley, and work with them and work with them on costs. We don't have an official sliding scale at this point. It's something I'm certainly looking into. But we, you know, having the spay-neuter clinic where we're doing up to 24 animals a day, we're spaying and neutering and doing vaccinations on, that's really allows us to be able to keep our costs low And also, we have a wonderful thrift store that's still located at our old location over.
That's over in International.
Yeah,
right?
549 West International, and that's it's great because it's animal centered. So people can donate kennels there and bedding and things like that, and we're able to
as well as household goods and things,
absolutely
anything that
clothes,
they...
shoes, household goods, and all sorts of items. So
and then that benefits the SPCA.
Absolutely. So those the net proceeds go back into our clinic, into our adoption center, and allow us to do
By the way, SPCA. I looked it up because I was like, what does that really mean? Society for the Prevention of cruelty to animals,
yeah.
Which is easy to get behind, right?
Absolutely. And there's, all over the nation, there are different organizations. We are not linked with the national organization, so we don't receive any outside funding. But, something that got me involved with working at the SPCA up here is I had volunteered, I grew up in New Jersey and had volunteered at a little local SPCA there and just loved the work. And I mm-hmm. find it so rewarding to really be able to help someone out who's in such, need for that. And so it's...
And you do have an adoption center, right?
We do, yes. We have an adoption center. It's at 8301 Petersburg Street.
Oh, another location.
It's another, yeah. We're...
You need a campus now.
We do. It's all, we've got a map for everybody. But it's a wonderful location that opened back in 2014. And we're able to house, it's small, we're able to house 10 dogs and up to 20 cats. Working with having the new clinic, frankly, is wonderful for our adoptable pets because we're able to take in some that maybe need a little bit of extra medical care. And
then they'll be ready for adoption.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we've got that location going on as well and working on some, doing some adoption clinics around town.
Right.
So.
Right. Later on the program, I'd love, before we get off the air, to find out how volunteers can get engaged with your organizations, because I think sometimes people listening to the show will think, well, I'd like to do something. What can I do? But I'm going to go right now to a call. We have a caller from Wasilla. Hi, William. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you. A good program. A couple of issues that I have is with people who have pets in their vehicles that are not restrained. If that vehicle is involved in an accident, that pet is injured, it's going to react to its premortal state, and it's going to bite whoever is next to it. And it doesn't make any difference if it's a little dinky Fido or a great big Rottweiler. There is some discussion afoot about passing regulations that require pets to restrain their pets in the vehicle.
So
the other thing is people who drive around, especially elderly people who are probably partially impaired, with a little dog on their lap. Why do they do that?
Because they love their dog.
Well, if they love their dog, they would restrain it.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by restrain? Like, are there dog seats? Is that mm-hmm. what you're talking about?
There are harnesses. Mm-hmm. There are cargo containers that will fit into seat belts. There's a lot of means of keeping your pet from being injured in an automobile accident and then attacking whoever is trying to help rescue the person, or pet. Mm-hmm. In an automobile accident.
And
the last thing. But,
oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
And that's people who make mouth-to-mouth contact with their pets and pass viruses and other diseases back and forth between cats and dogs and humans. Not a good practice.
All right. Well, I'm just going to invite our guests if they want to chime in on any of this. But Laura, you started to say there were dog... seatbelts?
I'll chime in on that part and I'll let Brad address, maybe even specifically about dogs and the
vehicles.
Open beds of trucks, especially. Yeah. But yes, there are. There's several different things you can have. I know, I have larger dogs, so I have harnesses on them that connect to the seatbelt in the back seat. And it's just, it's a lot easier for me to drive. It's safer than when I'm on the road because mm-hmm. my dog isn't trying to climb into the front seat with me. And yeah, I know that if I were to get in an accident, my dog can't then escape the car.
Oh.
So it's just, it's much safer for animals to be restrained in the car in some way.
Okay.
And from small dogs to large dogs, and you know, cats in a carrier, you know, there are definitely ways to do that. And then, you know, we get the issue of people with dogs in the back of trucks.
I can't comment on what the laws are in Wasilla, but I can tell you in the municipality of Anchorage, there are laws. If you have your dog in an open bed of a truck, per se, it's got to be cross-tethered, tied back there so that it can't get out. And then there's no rules as far as if it's in, like, the cab of your truck or your car, your SUV, as far as restraint goes. But there are rules for keeping them in there. Say you take your dog to work and leave it in your car. You know, the conditions in that car have to be adequate. It can't be too cold. It can't be too hot. They shouldn't be living in their urine and feces in there.
Mm-hmm. Do you get calls in wintertime where people feel they've seen a dog in a car and they feel like it's too cold?
We do.
Imagine we do get some hot days in the summer, maybe, mm-hmm. but it might be more frequently in the cold weather that you can
get? Well, we get them both times of the year. And summertime usually leads where we see animals that get more in distress with the heat, and that lead to more cruelty cases or charges, maybe even convictions on a criminal mm-hmm. level. But certainly we get quite a few complaints for animals left in vehicles all times of the year.
Yeah, you know, I have about a 40-pound mutt that I take to dog parks all the time. And so I thought I was doing good because I have one of those restraining mm-hmm. barriers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I realized if I was in a serious automobile accident and maybe the window broke, mm-hmm. There would be nothing to keep my dog inside my car.
Right.
Exactly.
So you're recommending, like, I usually have a leash on her just because I don't want her to not be mm-hmm. unleashed. So actually clipping that to something in the car.
Okay, yeah, and I use harnesses because I don't want something around the dog's neck,
okay.
right? That could be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I use harnesses, and then, you know, hit any pet supply store and, you know, you'll see them, and they clip. So the seatbelt goes through this attachment
mm-hmm.
and it's clipped to the back of the dog's harness, and then the seatbelt goes through that.
Okay.
And make sure your dog's wearing an ID tag at a minimum,
mm-hmm.
if not microchipped. Mm-hmm. They've got their rabies vaccine tag and dog
Always
license on. That way, if they're thrown from the vehicle in an accident and they run off and they end up in our shelter, we can return them to the owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I knew I had a friend who hit a moose. Mm-hmm. A terrible accident. They were knocked out. Their dog escaped. They never did get their dog back. And that was on top of the you know, glass in their faces mm-hmm. and all kinds of difficult things. And on top of it all, they lost their dog.
That's really sad.
It's a sad thing. So I guess I just didn't, I thought I was doing a good job with mm-hmm. just the barrier so that she didn't fly
right.
forward. Right. Pamela, anything you want to add to what we were just talking?
Just in terms of what you're talking about with microchips and tags, you know, just a public service announcement to register your microchip.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we're constantly running into mm-hmm. At the SPCA is a call that, you know, the microchip is tracked back to a vet clinic or to, you know, the SPCA, and we actually have started just automatically mailing those in for folks when they adopt or when they come in and get a microchip. But just for the general public, if you're getting a microchip done, make sure to send in that paperwork, because it'll make it so much easier if your animal is taken to animal control mm-hmm. or to, you know, a veterinary hospital that's has the capabilities of scanning a pet, that they would be able to track it back to you much more easily.
Mm. But that'd be awful to have a chip, to go to the trouble to get a chip, and then think when you need it.
People don't realize.
It's not
going to do.
Or they move. You know, they move and they don't update that information. That type of thing.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. By the way, I want to mention to folks that we've got on the Alaska Public website, one of the reasons we did this show was there were so many private groups trying to help animals. And so we've listed them, everything from Kitty and Canine Connection to Friends of Pets to Alaska Animal Rescue Friends, the SPCA Adoption Center. Mm-hmm. I probably am not even touching, you know, it's the tip of the iceberg, but it's interesting to me that the community, it's a rich community of people who want to do something and are trying to help, and it seems like it's having an impact.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
many of those rescue groups that you just mentioned are partners with Animal Care and Control, and they save a lot of lives every year. I hope I'm getting my number correct. I believe it was 257 of our animals were adopted by our rescue partners last year.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is Maybe it's a dog that came into us with a broken leg and needs to have surgery done and needs time to heal and then be up for adoption. We can reach out to our rescue groups and say, does somebody have the resources to take on this animal right now? It can be behavior. It can be a really shy or fearful dog that we know is a good dog, is going to do fine in a home, but maybe just really can't go to a home with children because with the children's louder voices and, you know, being a little more unpredictable, you know, would not be a good situation.
Yeah, but if the right home.
But the right home, exactly. Yeah. So that's how we work with our different rescue partners.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can't say enough about them.
Right. And so that makes it all possible, and it's probably been influential in turning the numbers around this year. So we're going to take a little break, but when we come back, I'd love to talk a little bit about Title 17. And Brad, I think that's an area that you know something about, which there, you know, we see stories in the newspaper from time to time. Maybe there'll be a large group of animals that are not being cared for, and somehow that gets into the news and the animals have to be saved. Or there's noise issues in, you know, we now have chickens in Anchorage in the code, and sometimes people are, whatever, some of those. So I think maybe laying out some of the issues that you deal with that relate to Title 17 would be kind of good. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today we're talking about strays, and that's cats, dogs, parrots, tortoises, companion birds, but it's a lot of cats and dogs. And here to sort of talk with us about it, we have Laura Atwood from the Anchorage Animal Care and Control Center. Brad Larsman is an enforcement officer, chief enforcement supervisor over there. and then we also have Pamela Metters from Alaska SPCA, who... Whereas the animal care and control is really municipal focused, SPCA Alaska is very present in Anchorage, but has kind of a statewide mission.
Absolutely.
So I told before, let's throw out our numbers in case people have questions. And then we'll talk a little bit about Title 17, just because that's important. 550-8433 in Anchorage. 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so Title 17 is how we live with animals, right?
Well, Title 17 is the law that governs domestic animals in the municipality. You know, I'll tell everybody first that there's a copy of it at muni.org/animal, and I always recommend people go there to look first before they go to webpages such as municode.com to look, because our webpage is going to show any amendments that have been made to the code and are not codified yet. So you may read something on another webpage that has been changed, but you'll find that change on our webpage. So muni.org/animal to get a copy of Title 17. And you know what? It talks everything from, you know, licensing your dog, vaccinating for rabies. I shouldn't say just dog because it's all domestic animals.
Even horses, right?
Well, you don't have to license horses.
But, oh, you don't?
No. But the code covers all domestic animals. You only have to license dogs.
Okay.
But licensing, rabies, vaccines, how you have to keep them restrained and to providing adequate food, water, shelter, veterinary care, noise or vocalization as the code defines it, So
we're talking no roosters, I think, right?
Well, our code does not restrict noise specific from any animal. It, like I said, it's vocalization. Oh. So any animal that vocalizes, any domestic animal that vocalizes, falls under the restrictions of Title 17. So that could be a rooster doing its thing in the morning. It could be
a howling.
Horse. Could be a howling dog. Could be a wailing cat. Uh-huh. It could be a horse vocalizing.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah, it's any vocalization. It's not just a barking dog
that
the noise ordinance covers.
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, but sure. I kind of want to know, what is a typical thing? Is there a most typical kind of call that's related to Title 17 that you get?
Well, we've got 12 categories that we categorize our calls in. If I looked at those 12 categories, there's four of them that really encompass stray animals, and that makes up about half of our calls. So, for example, it's not just like a stray dog call. We do prioritize those in what's called a priority 7, but, you know, a bite or an attack call could be a stray dog or a stray cat. Confined animals, you know, those are animals that are confined by somebody in the public, and it had to have been stray to get confined.
Mm-hmm.
So stray animals, whether they fall in any of those categories, is a bulk of our calls.
So I guess I was thinking that it would be more like do you get called to animal parks? Could somebody say, there's a wild dog here that's misbehaving?
Yep.
You could get called
yep,
to an
absolutely.
Okay. Is noise the biggest thing, or is strays is the biggest thing, and they're not necessarily noisy, right?
No, and we would a noise complaint, or if someone calls in about their neighbor's dog barking, we would classify that in a different priority, a priority 10. And just for example, in 2017, out of the 5,600 calls, barking complaints were about 700 of those calls.
Wow. Okay. That's a common thing then. Very common.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. What about people concerned about the welfare of an animal?
Absolutely.
Do you have numbers on that, or is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I got some numbers on that. In 2017, we responded to 958 requests for animal welfare checks. And that could have been anything from, you know, I see my neighbor's dog in the yard all the time, and I don't think it has a doghouse, or I never see them feeding it,
mm-hmm.
To those animals in hot or cold vehicles that we talked about
mm-hmm.
earlier.
We did talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I heard a story of a person person had dogs to be protection for them, mm-hmm. so they were kind of growly and noisy and scary. and I wonder if that's something you hear from very often. I mean, some people really regard their dogs as protection.
Sure.
You know, is there anything in Title 17 that would suggest what they need to do if they have that kind of an animal?
Well, any animal owner needs to abide by restraint laws. So whether your dog is aggressive, or your cat, or your horse, they got to keep them restrained.
Mm-hmm.
There's no laws that says you can't have a dog that's aggressive
mm-hmm.
or a cat that's aggressive. It's when you let them, for example, you leave your front gate open and they get out and they may injure another animal or show some aggressive behavior to the public, maybe threaten or endanger their safety, then that's when the title comes in. And,
mm-hmm.
and there are some restrictions in the code that are specifically outlined by behavior
mm-hmm.
that we can take enforcement action on.
So another thought I had was, for example, can you have a wolf? Would that be considered... is that anything that's ever come up before? Or
there,
being Alaska, you know, sometimes people have romantic notions of where they live and how they want to live. Does that ever come up?
Yeah, anybody that would ask me if they can have a wolf, I'd refer them to the state troopers and fishing game.
Mm-hmm.
There is some verbiage in Title 17 about wolf hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
The state did enact a law several years ago, I believe in 2001, about wolf hybrids. I'm not an expert on that,
mm-hmm.
But I would refer anybody that has wolf hybrid questions to
well,
talk to a biologist.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
We do have a caller. I'm just going to go ahead and welcome her on and see what her question is. Hi, Susan. This is Hometown Alaska.
Hi, I'm calling to also, I haven't heard all of your programs, so I don't know which organizations you might have mentioned, but I just wanted to say that there is a bird club called mm-hmm. the Alaska Bird Club, and it is, as well as an educational type of organization, it's a club that gives information and assistance to people with pet birds. And if someone wants to contact them, if there's a lost or found bird, the number is 351-2762. And you can find it online at www.alaskabirdclub.org.
I'll add that. I'll add that to our list, and it's great. Because I think, Laura, you were saying that sometimes not cats, not dogs are harder to find homes for.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we do, as we said, we take in any domestic animals. So that ranges from guinea pigs to birds, you know, to reptiles.
Yeah. Right.
And I do know that we have worked with Bird Treatment and Learning Center before when they've taken some, if we get in especially injured wildlife that may come to us.
Wild.
Even though, you know, we don't care for them. We'll transfer them on to Bird Treatment and Learning Center. I am guessing here, and I hope I'm not incorrect, that we have probably worked with the Alaska Bird Club, too. Maybe you guys are even a rescue partner of ours.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah. Are you? Okay, great. Okay.
That's great. How large is your club, and do you foster birds if people looking for a home?
There's fostering. What we do now is we put together two people in contact with each other, one relinquishing a bird and one seeking to adopt one. So we're sort of a third party type of thing. We used to, what did we do? We adopted them out and did home visits, but what we're doing right now is with time and people who will go out and do the volunteer work. Don't do the home visits anymore, but just connect the two parties with their information.
I know when we had this program, it was someone from the Bird TLC Center who called and said, I'm not talking about wild birds here. I'm actually talking about companion birds, and there's a great need. She didn't mention the club, so I'm glad you called in and told us about it.
Apparently a lot of people just don't know about it, and that's why we're going to be involved in the outhouse races in the Rondi, and one reason for that, not just fun, but to get the word out about us as much as we can, because I don't think a lot is known about that it even exists.
Well, we're glad you called in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll add your phone number and your club website to our list here on alaskapublic.org, just one more way that the word might get out. So, you know, I just have a question. How do birds, companion birds, do in Alaska? Do they do fine, or do we have especially dry weather that's hard for them? Or is there anything there, Susan, that you can offer?
I think for the most part they do pretty well, but there are birds who have been found outside at this time of year. And in fact, the club has a little bird, a little budgie, a little parakeet, that has a frostbitten foot and has bitten his toes off because the tissue is dead, obviously.
Hmm.
So it's really important that people don't leave their doors open, or in the summertime have their windows open, because this happens. I mean, birds are found all the time.
Hmm.
And have their wings clipped. I mean, it's not the greatest thing, but at least, you know, it'll keep your birds from flying away and getting lost or getting attacked by a predator.
Laura's going to jump in here.
If
Susan.
I can jump in, I just got a text from our veterinary assistant. Yes, we work with Alaska Bird Club. They are awesome. And rescue parrots and other small birds that can't be placed for adoption at our facility, mainly for medical reasons.
Okay.
So thank you.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks, Susan. I appreciate the call and sharing the information about it's the Anchorage Bird Club, right?
The Alaska
Bird Club.
Bird Club.
Okay, that's great. Are you represented around the state then?
Yes.
Okay, so someone in Fairbanks might be able to access and work with your club too. So that's great.
Yeah, and there's that phone number and the website.
Okay, okay. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I wanted to jump to you, Pamela, because I know when I was looking at your material at the Alaska SPCA that you have a mobile clinic. And that's certainly one of the major issues in non-urban areas, the community. Alaska's a huge state. It has animals and cats and dogs all over the state. So I understand you're able to do something on the road system. Tell us about that.
Yeah, our mobile clinic is basically a self-sufficient clinic. So we can do spays and neuters. We can we have refrigeration to do vaccinations. We can do wellness exams in there. And actually, if anybody would like to visit and take a tour of our mobile clinic, it will be at the Ferrande Grand Parade on February 24th. So we'll be attending that. If you want to check it out, but
how do people know your schedule? Is it on your website, like where the mobile clinic is going, or?
So we will have that on our website. We're still working out some of the details of what our plan is.
So it's that new
for the.
It's
so we've new. Had we've had the mobile clinic for a few years now, and it's I think its most recent trip out was a couple of years ago to Big Lake. So we were able to do over 2 days. I believe we did about 25 animals, about 25 spays and neuters, a lot of the sled dogs. We got out there and we're able to take care of those. So we are absolutely, now that we have our clinic set up and, you know, it's up and running and things are moving along well with that, we're going
to work on getting that out. Would you potentially go to Homer, or does Homer have enough, you know, vet care and facilities that you wouldn't consider Homer?
We would certainly consider it, you know, and that's something that the SPCA is, you know, we would love to hear from various communities and what their needs are, and kind of working with some of the organizations, the, you know, human health organizations, some of the tribal health organizations in various communities to determine where the greatest need is and what the greatest need is, and and how we can how we can help. So I'm working with some various veterinarians around the state of Alaska and you know, trying to kind of you know, hone in on what those needs are and where we can be of the most benefit. And then, you know, even if it's, we would love to take our mobile clinic out and it's, you know, it's ready to go. But certainly even flying to places, taking a team of our vet techs and our veterinarians and flying to places and providing services and vaccination and education. I think
not just on the road system.
Absolutely.
I know that, today, when we were putting together the show, we learned that there's a number of people in the veterinary community that are speaking right now at the Alaska Forum on the Environment, I think, specifically on rural Alaska healthcare, ways of coordinating among the various agencies. The Alaska SPCA would be one.
Absolutely.
I think there's the ARVO, Alaska Rural Veterinary Outreach.
Yes.
There's others, I know. Yeah. But figuring out a way to, how do you cover this massive territory, much like Brad has to cover with seven officers, the footprint of the municipality, beyond, what do you call it?
It's the municipality.
It is the municipality, but it goes all the way up to Kinnick.
Yeah, it's not just the Anchorage Bowl.
The Bowl.
Right.
If you just look at that problem statewide and the idea, I know we've had Sally Clampett on before with ARVO. She said the issues they have are like, well, should we, it's important to go more than once to a community.
Yeah.
You can't just do a once a year drop in, even with the best of planning, that's not enough. And yet she said, we're faced with, should we go twice to this community and not at all to another community? So the effort of this panel discussion apparently at the Forum for the Environment is about, how do we have a lot of resources out there, how can we start to work together to cover more territory? Anything you can add to that?
Well, I think what you hit the nail on the head there. That's key, is us all working together. The more organizations that are working together, and not just veterinary organizations, public health and the tribal health organizations, even having education up in the, you know, some of these, the schools and some of the rural areas, learning about the importance of vaccinations and the importance of spay and neuter, and, you know, just providing resources, working together to provide resources
to a
lot of
communities. And if you don't know, you won't be able to make the right decisions.
Exactly. Yeah. If you don't know, you don't know. And so I think that's going to be key, is getting all of these organizations together being a formidable force kind of going into a lot of the places that just don't have the infrastructure to have a full-time animal control officer even. And don't have the facilities, figuring out how best, you know, what their needs are, rather than saying, oh, you know, we take a a plan, an Anchorage-based plan, and this works in Anchorage, it's a whole different world.
And rural communities,
I really would love to get feedback from a lot of the other organizations. Out in some of these rural places, and speaking with veterinarians in areas that visit areas, southeast, up north, and just determining what that need is. I think that's going to be key.
All right. Well, you're easy to find, Alaska SPCA, if people want to share information, or they can call us here today, 550-8433. But I did want to spend a little bit of time. Oh, I've got a couple of emails coming in. But the idea of reading animal signals, I think that's really useful information. I know, Laura, you told me you go into the schools and you speak with children about what's the best way to approach a dog, or what signals is a dog giving you that maybe they're nervous or they're not ready for a hug. So I guess I'd like, what are some, we did put your PowerPoint on our website.
Thank you.
And if you need to refer to it, here it is. But I'm obviously when a dog is eating, that's not a great time to hang around and fuss with them. But also sometimes they're giving you signals that you're just too close. Could you talk, both you and Brad, and jump in, Pamela, you know, how do you read what's going on in a dog's mind and what they're trying to tell you, if we could only understand?
When I'm talking to students, and I talk to usually about 1,000 kindergarten through sixth graders every year, I try to really distill it down to a few key things that they'll notice. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is going to be in the face, because that's what humans are looking at, right? We're not real good at reading the rest of the body. So it's looking at things like a tightly closed mouth. You know, I start out showing an illustration of my dog with a really happy expression. He's got this, you
almost
know,
a smile.
Almost a smile. And that's what the kids always say, oh, he's smiling. You know, and then you compare that to a tightly closed jaw, eyes kind of narrowed, his brow is sort of furrowed like ours are when we're worried about something. So looking for these signs in the face, looking for ears being back. And then we move on to things like turning the head away from you. It can be as simple as just turning their head away. I'm going to try to be polite and pretend I don't see what you're doing. Right. But I really, really don't like that right now. Uh-huh, yeah. Uh-huh. And then, you know, the tail being tucked between the legs. Mm-hmm. Just asking them, look at these things in a dog. And if you're seeing these things, whether even if it's your own dog, you know, who you love and who loves you, if you're seeing these things, that dog is not comfortable. We talk about that in the presentation, and it's always a little tricky because you don't want to leave making kids be afraid of their dog either. So I always try to end that with how dogs can be and want to be our friends. And whenever I can, whenever the teacher allows, I bring my dog with me, and then the kids have an opportunity to interact with him.
Practice.
Right. But I think that, you know, Brad can speak to how often we're hearing about bites to children, and how often that's coming from trying to take the bone away from the dog or getting your food.
Yeah.
So,
You know, I'd always recommend, like, approaching someone else's dog, ask the owner, is it okay to pet your dog? You know, something as simple as that can keep you from being bitten. And, you know, teach kids not to take food from animals. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a good practice for kids.
Number one, don't take away.
They're likely to not get bit. And I think another thing that's important for those that aren't trained in behavior is try to make yourself look a little smaller to the animal. You know, don't stand front up to him. Maybe turn to the side a little bit. You know, put your side to him. If you think about animal behavior, they try to make each other look bigger when they're faced off. You know, that's why their hackles go up.
It's kind of a challenge.
And their tails go up. Uh-huh. Yeah, make yourself look a little smaller, whether you have to kneel down on a knee or just turn your side to them so you look a little smaller. That may help a little bit. Mm-hmm. And really, if you're unsure, don't approach them, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of agencies out there on the internet where you can take some, you know, look at basic slideshows about animal behavior and just basic body posturing is really helpful if, you know, anybody out there is wondering, I walk the trails. I really don't know about dog behavior, maybe I should go look at something. You know, look at the ASPCA, American Humane.
They'll have lots of information about
There's information.
Washing the ears, the mouth, the tail.
Right. Yep. At our shelter, we've got flyers. So.
Yeah. We did get a call here. Actually, it's an email. Besides dog parks, what are the rules about leashing your dog within the municipality? Does that include the trails?
It does. You know, there's several ways that the city says you need to or you can control your vehicle, but if you're in a public place, which trails are public places, your animal has to be controlled by leash. That doesn't mean your animal can be under voice command. You've got to have a leash in your possession that's connected to the dog, and you're in control of it. Now, an electronic collar is a substitute for a leash. For example, the collar's on the dog's around its neck, and you've got a remote in your hand, and you can control that dog's movements. But it does have to be on a leash in a public place. There is an exception in the code there for you know, for example, there's a retriever club who's been designated maybe a part of the city to do their retriever training. They can do that in that area as long as it has minimal impact on the public. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the other exception is off-leash dog spaces. You know, I believe there's 7 dog parks in the city where people can take their animals to be off-leash. Mm-hmm. But in public places, they have to be on a leash.
So how about Kincaid Park? Would you say
on a leash?
Always on a leash.
On a leash.
How about the Chugach foothills?
State parks, they've got their own rules. And then there's the Campbell Tract off of Elmore Road. BLM covers a part of that area where they've got their own rules. Mm-hmm. My officers don't patrol those areas, but anything that's in municipal public property on a leash.
And you know, when you get called to a troubled dog situation, and those are the same reading. You're reading the same signals, or you just like if you have to take away a dog that's not happy and it's having a bad day. How do you do it? Do you use a particular long handled?
Officers do have quite a few tools in their toolbox. Their biggest tool is their head. You know,
we all have that one, but we don't always use it, right?
Absolutely. But they do have catch poles or a restraint pole that they can use to keep the animal from getting at them. Mm-hmm. You know, those long rigid poles, I'm sure everybody's seen them.
Yeah.
You know, they wear a lot of protective gear. You know, they'll likely wear long sleeves and good gloves that are bite resistant or puncture resistant. Mm-hmm. And we teach them about behavior. You know, we give them basic behavior classes, and then through observation, you know, they're spending about 3 months with another officer before they go out and work on their own, and they're getting a lot of experience with an experienced officer on what to look for and little cues and yummy chummies go a long ways too.
Yeah, we've got another email from a woman who says, "I have a stray cat in my neighborhood that comes into my house and harasses my own cat, who doesn't have." Front claws and can't defend herself. The stray comes in through the dog door and we've chased it out of the house and we found it. But what should we do? We've called animal control and the neighbors have also complained, but the stray persists.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Our officers do not chase stray cats because they're so hard to capture. It's not like a dog where we can throw a yummy chummy and read some body behavior and convince them to come to us or hop in our truck. Mm-hmm. Whenever there's loose cat problems and you don't know where it comes from, we offer humane traps at our center. People got to come. They do got to pay a deposit to get those traps, but they take a humane trap. We'll show them how it works, and they can take that trap home and humanely trap the cat. And then they can either bring that to us or they can call our dispatcher and they'll dispatch an officer out there to pick that up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's good. We have a couple minutes left, and I thought people listening to this show might be saying, gee, I'd like to get involved. What can I do? So I just quickly go from, you know, the animal care and control and over to SPCA. How do you use volunteers? We probably have a minute or so.
Okay, so really quickly, probably our biggest need for volunteers is our foster program, primarily kittens. So if you're interested in fostering, get in touch with us. We'd love to talk to you about it.
Okay, and can people walk dogs? Can they come in and volunteer to walk dogs?
Yes, we do have volunteers who spend time with their animals at the shelter, too.
Okay, and what was the date that you had, where you have the once a month help for, that's, what's
yes,
the date
on? Yes, that's the 4th Wednesday of every month.
Okay. All right. And shifting over to SPCA, how do you use volunteers and how can people get in touch with you?
Our volunteers they help out at our thrift store and at our adoption center, and they are, you know, a wonderful assistants to have. Thrift store, you're going through inventory, helping out with the cash register, pricing things, working with the great staff over there. And then our adoption center, it's anything from cleaning kennels to, you know, socializing cats, brushing them out. We've got some wonderful volunteers that have some background in training, and they're working with dogs in that way. So it's a great thing. It's a great program.
Lots of ways to help. Yep, all right.
Look on our website.
All right. That's great. Well, you hear the music, you know that our hour is up. And so I really want to thank Laura Atwood with the Anchorage Animal Care and Control, Brad Larson, the enforcement supervisor there at the Animal Care and Control, and also Pamela Metters, Director of Operations at Alaska SPCA. So thank you all for coming.
You're welcome.
I'll be back next week on Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska, along with co-host Senior Judge Elaine Andrews, when we talk about the jury system and how juries are selected in court cases. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.